September 11th for the South Asian and Arab community in the U.S., although brought on a heap of attack in a way that we haven't perhaps seen before, was not new. We can't put everything on September 11th. September 11th allowed this government to basically give the green light to policies that had been written and drafted and put into place years before.
Every single person going into the INS seeking to better your life, you all are living a lie right now, because the fact is the government is stepping up its attack on our families and our rights and our safety.
Zindabad! INS, Zindabad! Inqilab, Zindabad! INS, Zindabad!
Which means long live freedom and death to the INS.
Our organization, along with the other members of the Coalition Against Special Registration, feel that it's really important that people are aware of what's going on through this program. They're asking tens of thousands of Muslim men and teenage boys, actually, to come into an INS office and present themselves for interrogation, to present themselves for photographing and fingerprinting. And what they're not telling them is that they're also presenting themselves, in many cases, for deportation and possible detention.
What is the problem with us, the immigrants? Are we robbing this country? No! We are contributing to the building of this world, dominating economy of the USA, and the vibrant culture of this great land.
With the war on Iraq, and all these like threats to national security, what's on the news every day, people think that this is worth it, you know, and they don't understand how much of an effect this is having on immigrant communities, like how much it is destroying the fabric of immigrant communities.
I got involved in this work over 2 years ago when it directly affected my own family. My uncle was deported, my father was put into deportation proceedings. Registration has really raised a lot of awareness, provoked a lot of debate, but I feel like people keep on talking about registration as though it's something new, talking about detention as though it's something new, and I think it's really important to get out there that this is all part of a pre-existing agenda. This is stuff that existed for a while and stuff that's not going to go away unless we start to think about it more in the bigger picture. Like, what is Ashcroft trying to do right now? What is Bush trying to accomplish right now? Is it really national security? Is it really just targeting Arabs, Muslims, South Asians? When the fact is, the majority of people deported over the last decade have all been Latinos. Our communities have so much to learn from each other. Like, I'm an Indian person, and I think it's so important right now for Desi people, Arabs, Muslims, South Asians, to connect with Caribbean people, Latino people, African people, who are going through the same sorts of hardship. You know, our communities don't recognize how much we have in common right now, and it's really important to push that forward.
Hello, and welcome to Manhattan Neighborhood Network live call-in show, Media, War, and Prisons, the impact of war on immigrant communities. Over the last several months, the United States, New York City, has seen an explosion in the anti-war movement. We've seen people go to the streets protesting in hundreds of thousands against what the Bush administration is doing abroad, namely in Iraq right now. What we haven't seen as much of covered in corporate media is how this war affects us at home. What is the domestic face of this war? So we're here today to talk with activists in the New York area who deal with immigrant communities, civil rights issues, social justice issues on a day-to-day basis to talk about the domestic face of this war, specifically as it impacts immigrants and people of color. My name is Aarti Shahani, and I'm an organizer at Families for Freedom, a network of people in the New York and New Jersey area facing immigrant detention and deportation. We have around us today a panel of very esteemed and very hardworking activists and organizers in New York. We can go around and introduce ourselves.
Okay. I'm Chi-Sun Lee, a staff writer at The Village Voice.
I'm Shourav Sharkar, a community organizer at Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
I'm Shreya Jansons, and I am a program coordinator at SIA, which is South Asian Youth Action.
I'm Monami Malik, and I'm an organizer and director at DRUM, Desi's Rising Up and Moving.
I'm Chino Hardin. I'm a youth organizer at Prison Moratorium Project.
So what's interesting about the fact that we're doing this show today, April 24th, is exactly 7 years ago, Congress passed the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act,
the acronym is AEDPA. AEDPA completely changed the immigration, detention, and deportation system. At that time, Congress was very heated over the immigrant question. How are immigrants affecting the United States in terms of welfare policy, in terms of jobs, in terms of security, et cetera? And Congress actually developed the political impetus to go ahead and overhaul the detention and deportation laws, to expand the grounds of deportation, to make virtually all immigrants in contact with the criminal justice system at all, for example, mandatorily deportable, to make asylum seekers detainable upon entry into the United States. And they also started pouring in millions and millions of dollars into enforcement of these new and stringent policies. What's interesting about AEDPA is it was passed on the one-year anniversary of Timothy McVeigh, a white American in a militia, bombing the Oklahoma City building. For those of you that are old enough to remember, Newt Gingrich really seized on that moment and sort of meshed it into his contract with America to force a Republican Congress and a Democratic president, Bill Clinton, to go ahead and enact this terrible legislation that really transformed the way we look at detention and deportation today. Since AEDPA, a lot has happened. Namely, September 11th, I think, has heightened people's awareness of immigrant detention and deportation. People now talk about this issue very publicly as something that impacts Arab, Muslim, South Asian communities. And we're here today to talk about sort of more broadly how it affects immigrants, where the work needs to go from here, talk about the coverage in the media, and move from that point. So if we could go around, I wanted to start off with a few questions for each of our panelists. One is, how would you define the domestic war, and how does this war impact immigrant communities specifically? So maybe you'd like to start?
Sure, yeah. Well, at The Village Voice, I write a lot about this sort of battle that's been put as civil liberties versus national security since September 11th. But that can be something of a misnomer, because I think we have to look at what national security really means, and often it boils down to government control, so sort of individual liberties versus government control. And the war, in terms of legal rights, has boiled down a lot to communities, definitely most severely for immigrant communities, organizing against this law enforcement structure. And in some ways, it's also boiled down to different branches of government versus the Bush administration and the executive branch that has definitely dominated the formation of policies and the administration of policies. And in terms of an impact on immigrants especially, I think that what's most stark is that immigration policy, in many ways since September 11th, has come down as just that, internal policy changes and not necessarily legislative changes even, that are subject to public debate and public awareness. And I think a very good example of that is this afternoon, Attorney General John Ashcroft, who's the head of the Justice Department, overruled an immigration judge's decision on Haitian refugees who had been held in detention, you guys probably know better than I do how long, but for quite a long time, many weeks if not months, I think. And an immigration judge had ruled, you know, against indefinite detention for the Haitian refugees, and Attorney General Ashcroft said that his department's decision superseded even an immigration judge's decision for national security purposes. And ultimately, so the headlines this afternoon reporting on this in the mainstream media said, Attorney General basically okays indefinite detention for immigrants. And that's huge. And that didn't go through Congress. It didn't get debated. It just came down today as an internal policy decision.
I mean, I think in terms of defining the war, the domestic war, I'd put into that category all of the things that have been implemented by the Bush administration since September 11th that have been done through this atmosphere of secrecy that Chi-Sun is pointing to, and that are largely permissible only because, in my opinion, the administration has really cowed the American public into a state of fear. They've perpetuated this idea that we are permanently insecure, that at any second something could happen to us, and whether you live in rural Nebraska or whether you live in downtown Manhattan, you are constantly threatened. And as a result of this, you need to not question what they're saying, you need to not stand up for your rights, you need to not stand up for other people's rights. And obviously the people that are going to be most affected by this are going to be the people who have the least political power. And one of those groups are non-citizens. And so we've seen since September 11th, I would say two things. One is an acceleration of the crackdown on immigrants' rights and the state of sort of the permissiveness with which immigrants are allowed to live in this country. And then the second thing is a new kind of racial profiling. Or not a new kind of racial profiling, but a new racial profiling, which profiles people on the basis of their ethnicity and their religion. And narrowly, it encompasses South Asians and Muslims and Arab communities, but then there's a sort of a larger tier which encompasses Filipinos, Indonesians, people from other parts of the world, and then most broadly, I would say it encompasses all non-citizen communities. And that includes both the government's policies, whether it's immigration detentions that are closed off from the public, where lawyers are put under gag orders, or whether it's special registration, which involves 70,000 plus people having already gone into first an INS office and now a Department of Homeland Security office to get fingerprinted and questioned, and in about 12% of the case had their deportation proceedings initiated. And the whole series of policies implemented in between that never came to the light of day, the raids on the airports, the raids on the taxi industry and the security industry in San Diego before the Super Bowl, Operation quote-unquote Liberty Shield, which was supposed to protect the country by detaining people who were seeking asylum from persecution in other countries. So, I mean, I think overall that's sort of the broad thrust of what the domestic war means.
Could you actually briefly define what a non-citizen is?
Sure. I mean, to me, a non-citizen is anyone in the United States who doesn't have American citizenship. Okay. And that includes people who have green cards, that includes people who are here on a tourist visa, people who have overstayed, people who are quote-unquote legal. It's everybody who doesn't have American citizenship.
Okay. You want to mention me?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So since 9/11, my organization has been really focusing on the effects of 9/11, particularly on South Asian and Arab and Muslim communities. But one of the things that we've been clear about from the beginning is that, you know, 9/11 really brought to light what had been going on for many, many years, and that many of our communities were affected by these issues and had been organizing around these issues long before. And one of the critical factors, I think, that we really focus on is that 9/11 sort of has created this framework of a dividing line of citizenship, you know, between citizens and non-citizens. And I think it's a really dangerous dividing line, particularly when you talk about how communities resist these policies, how people fight back against these policies. Because it's disconnecting immigration issues from a broader context of racial justice in this country and the history of movements like the civil rights movement, the anti-prison movement, and what we're really trying to do is connect those two movements and those two histories, because what's happening to immigrants post 9/11, post 1996 is really part of that broader issue, you know, and I mean, that's why we work really closely with other organizations like the Prison Moratorium Project that Chino's here from, and many others that have been working around broader prison issues. Because, you know, post 9/11, it's pretty clear that immigrants are now sort of the population to criminalize and to jail, and that this country already has this huge prison population that's out of control. And detention centers is sort of like, you know, where the new focus is at, and these communities are now being targeted in a very similar way that African American and Latino communities have been targeted for many years. it's also, you know, a major, major human rights issue within the borders of the U.S. And for that reason, the war on terrorism, its domestic face and its face abroad is absolutely connected. For us, when we work with immigrant families, it's really clear that people are not here, for the most part, from third world countries because, you know, of the myth of the American dream, or because, you know, they're going to be saved, or because they're wanting to leave their families and their homelands, but because they're forced to. They're economic refugees or refugees of military policies all around the world. And if you really dig back far enough, a lot of these policies are really U.S. Imposed policies. So many people in South Asia are here in the last 10 years because of failed economic policies imposed by the U.S. and the IMF and the World Bank. And so it's like this cycle. So people are forced to leave their countries, come here, end up in detention centers, and are targeted. And so for us, you know, what's happening in Iraq and the U.S. militarism there creates more refugees. It creates more of this, you know, international community of migrants who themselves are criminalized with their families rather than the governments and the corporations that are behind, you know, forcing them to move around and displacing them in the first place.
Well, for folks of color, the domestic war is nothing new, something that has been going on since the beginning of time with the U.S. government. I mean, it's just another way for this government to lock up another group of folks of color, and it just happens to be South Asian, Arab, and Muslim folks this time. 20, 30 years ago, even right now as we speak, it was heavily Latinos, Black, and African Americans. So what, in my opinion, the domestic war is another trick by the prison industrial complex to basically boost this economy, because we all know that the prison's population has been steadily declining. We know that it's not a good investment anymore. So, you know, when you have the CEO of the Corrections Corrections Corporation saying, you know, we understand right now, since September 11th, that the immigrant folks are the fastest growing segment of the federal prison population, so we're going to put more money into that. We're going to put more. The Lehman Brothers will back the Corrections Corporation and put more money into that. So what happens? You have a whole segment of folks who are not only in prison, but they're in prison indefinitely. There's no trial. There's no official date on when they come on. So you have secured funding through these messed up immigration laws and through the Patriot Act and through every other civil liberties that the government denies folks. You have secure funding for them by virtue of having these people in prison with never a possibility of coming out unless they're being deported.
Well, the nice thing about going last is I feel like everyone has made really great points. And I think that from my perspective, part of what the domestic war means to me is not just the actions of war, not just the acts of war, but like the consequences of it, right? Like the hidden consequences and like the collateral damage of what that means. And I think that for the population I work with, or from what I can see, some of those consequences are like this wartime mentality, right? So we have a media that is, you know, sending all these images to kind of, you know, get you to accept this. Or we have an environment of fear and where people are like under constant surveillance or constant threat. And I think it's like those kind of mentalities and that kind of total environment that symbolizes a domestic war to me, you know, that at every given moment we feel like we are at war, whether or not the bombs are dropping here, we still feel like that level of threat. I feel like what that ends up happening is that there's a lot that is permissible under those circumstances. And so for the young people I work with, I think that what's interesting is the effect that has on them, I think, partly is just a really big sense of insecurity, you know? And for young immigrant youth, I think, to come to this country, to take it as home and to feel like this is, you know, their home and they belong, to suddenly, overnight almost, feel unwanted, feel unwelcome, feel like they don't belong here, I think is a very deep and traumatic emotional event. Since then, though, I think past September 11th, what's ended up happening is that I think the domestic war means an assault on all fronts against all people. And so I think that part of our work is making those links, right, is making those links between all people who are under attack and to really make clear the illustrations between different issues, like what are the connections between different issues and what are the connections between different populations. Because if we're at war, then I feel like we're all under attack, and the only way to really address it is by being clear that we are a community.